You're listening to The Andy Finn Show, centrally located in America, on the TAFS Radio Network.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show, and I'm going to spend the next segment talking about a couple of things, but it's primarily about the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law. Do you remember the rule of law? Republicans were very big on this back when they were trying to entrap Bill Clinton in the little sex scandal, and they got Monica Lewinsky to spill her guts, and Linda Tripp taped it, and then she turned the information over to a Republican partisan prosecutor, Ken Lay, who then asked Clinton questions, hoping that he would lie, and Clinton did. And they caught him, and they thought they could impeach him and throw him out of office. That's their definition of the rule of law. Meanwhile, Republicans look the other way when George W. Bush breaks the law. And I'm talking about serious lawbreaking. Secret CIA prisons. Having people disappear. There's an article in the Washington Post this week, today already, that talked about the fact that some of the prisoners that the CIA spirited away through extraordinary rendition, that is, kidnap them on the streets of some European city, and then nobody ever sees them again. Bush said he took all the prisoners out of those prisons in Eastern Europe and elsewhere and moved them to Guantanamo, but we still don't know where some of these people are. The Washington Post had a detailed accounting of who is missing and is suspected under U.S. control, but we don't know if they're dead or alive, if we beat them to death, if we've released them on the streets of some city and they haven't come forward yet. But we don't know where they are. That's not the way this country operates. And then there's the warrantless surveillance. Now, Bush goes with all of these things. He says, well, the reason I'm breaking the law is that this is an extraordinary situation, and I want to keep America safe, so I'm within my rights under the Constitution, therefore I'm not breaking the law. There was a famous quote from Richard Nixon in which he said, when the president does it, it's not breaking the law. In other words, anything the president does is within the law. Nixon actually said that. And that's the attitude that George W. Bush seems to have, which is really remarkable when you think about it. Anyway, I want to talk about a couple of things here. One is a speech that Chris Dodd gave in the Senate last week. Now, Chris Dodd's running for president on the Democratic side. And he's not my favorite. I would prefer to see somebody like Joe Biden, a serious man with a serious plan, both for Iraq and otherwise, not particularly a partisan. But he does not suffer fools gladly. If you can't defend your ideas, you got your hands full when you're talking to Biden. And, of course, Biden has no chance, just like Dodd has no chance to win the nomination. We don't elect serious people anymore, really. We elect people who entertain us. Reagan, Clinton, Bush. Bush's father was a serious guy, and he didn't entertain us much. Anyway, Chris Dodd gave this speech. Now, by way of prefacing this, I still recall. I watch Bill O'Reilly's O'Reilly Factor. Don't ask me why. Every so often, and he has a regular feature now in which he brings on Dennis Miller, the comedian and former Monday Night Football color man. He brings on Dennis Miller to make wisecracks about the news. And, of course, Dennis Miller's a conservative, so he cracks wise about liberals and Democrats, mostly. And Chris Dodd was on that night earlier talking to Bill O'Reilly, and he called O'Reilly on the fact that the reason he's upset with Media Matters and calls them this vile website is because of their politics. They're on the left. There's plenty of sites on the right that trash the other side. And Media Matters doesn't actually trash anybody. I guess it was also, he was talking about the Daily Coast site, too. And he O'Reilly was picking out a few little comments that people had written on the blogs, right? In other words, the writers on Daily Coast or any website, you know, Powerline blog, for example, on the right, or any of the ones on right or left, the writers for the blogs post their articles, their statements, their views, and then the readers can post comments reacting to the posts. And so Bill O'Reilly has people trolling through those comments looking for outrageous things. When people say, you know, I hope all the Republicans die or something like that, he grabs that and cites it as something that the Daily Coast has on their website. Well, of course, they didn't write that. Mostly, the Daily Coast, although they get fed up and occasionally use a swear word, they have some pretty detailed analysis of issues, just the way some of the blogs on the right do. But O'Reilly pulls out these few and attacks the ones on the left, and he ignores the similar comments that are out there on the blogs on the right, and even the comments on his own website that are up there. And some of these sites all, you know, try and police it, and they take down the most outrageous comments usually, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Chris Dodd was on, just calling O'Reilly out on the fact that he's just picking on the blogs on the left and ignoring the ones on the right, and that his real problem with Daily Coast and Media Matters is that they're, is their politics. They're on the left. And O'Reilly would not concede the point, even though it's obvious. And I have a chapter in the book I'm outlining on right-wing talk show hosts, and the chapter on O'Reilly is entitled, Why Doesn't Bill O'Reilly Realize He's a Conservative? Because he swears he's not. We've covered that before as well, as you know if you listen to this show regularly. Anywho, Dennis Miller comes on that same night, and he said, what do you think of the exchange with Chris Dodd? And he says, Chris Dodd is a hack. Now, if you're familiar with the origin of the term, in the world of comedians, a hack is somebody who's not a very good comedian. So it'd be an amateur, somebody who's not very good at their job, whatever. So here's a sitting U.S. senator running for president, a serious man. He's been in the Senate, I think he's been in the Senate more than 20 years, let's say 18 years. I think it's longer. I think it's 25 years. He's going on his fifth term, which would be a total of 30 years. But a serious politician. And he knows a heck of a lot more than Bill O'Reilly and Dennis Miller combined when it comes to foreign affairs, domestic affairs, whatever you want to name. Just breadth of knowledge. Forget ideology. Just facts about situations, explaining issues. He knows more than both of them put together, plus a couple of other hosts that Fox News has. You could throw them in. And Dennis Miller's got the nerve to come on and call a sitting senator who's running for the U.S. presidency and who calls Bill O'Reilly on his nonsense, calls him a hack. Anyway, with that in mind, let's talk just a little bit about Chris Dodd's speech. So this is, I'm going to quote at length from Dodd's speech. He gave it on the 26th. That would have been last Friday on the Senate floor. And this is a pretty scathing indictment of the Bush administration. Mr. President, this is the president of the Senate. For 6 years, the president, that would be George W., has demonstrated time and again that he doesn't respect the role of Congress, nor does he respect the rule of law. Every 6 years, as United States senators, we take the oath to uphold the Constitution. Our colleagues on the House side take the oath every 2 years. That is important. For 6 years, this president has used scare tactics to prevent the Congress from reining in his abuse of authority. A case in point is the current direction this body appears to be headed as we prepare to reform and extend the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That's FISA. Many of the unprecedented rollbacks to the rule of law by this administration have been made in the name of national security. The Bush administration has relentlessly focused our nation's resources and manpower on a war of choice in Iraq. That ill-conceived war has broken our military, squandered resources, and emboldened our enemies. All true, but there's nothing in that line that talks about undermining the Constitution, I don't think. Well, it's true that he didn't exactly get a declaration of war against Iran, but we don't require that anymore. We just pretend that Congress has to declare war on countries. Continuing with Chris Dodd's speech from last Friday, the president's wholesale disregard of the rule of law has compounded the damage done in Iraq and made our nation less secure, and as a direct consequence of these acts, we are less secure, more vulnerable, and more isolated in the world. Consider the scandal at Abu Ghraib, where Iraqi prisoners were subjected to inhumane and humiliating acts by U.S. personnel charged with guarding them. Consider Guantanamo Bay. Rather than helping to protect the nation, the prisons at Guantanamo Bay have instead become the very symbol for our weakened moral standing in the world. Consider the secret prisons run by the CIA and the practice of extraordinary rendition that allows them to evade the U.S. law regarding torture. Now we're getting to breaking the laws in the Constitution. Consider the shameful actions of our outgoing Attorney General, who politicized prosecutions, who was more committed to serving the president who appointed him than the laws he had sworn to uphold. Of course, on most of these issues, if you are a partisan on the far right, you take issue and say, no, that's not how it happened. But we've discussed them at length here. And of course, consider the Military Commissions Act, a law that allows evidence obtained through torture to be admitted into evidence. It denies individuals the right to counsel. It denies them the right to invoke the Geneva Conventions. It denies them the single most important and effective safeguard of liberty man has known, the right of habeas corpus, permitting prisoners to be brought before a court to determine whether their detainment is lawful. Warrantless wiretapping, torture, the list goes on. Each of these policies shares two things in common. First, they have weakened our ability to prosecute the global war on terrorism, if for no other reason than they've made it harder, if not impossible, to build international support and cooperation needed to fight it. And second, each has only been possible because Congress has not been able to stop this president's unprecedented expansion of executive power, although some in this body have tried. I'm going to pause there. This is Chris Dodd in a speech on the Senate floor last Friday. And I'm going to stop and move down a little bit to another segment of this speech. Let's see. So he's talking about the bill on FISA. And as I mentioned before, part of what the Bush administration wants in the FISA Revision Act. Now, keep in mind, they passed this bill about 5 months ago, but they only passed it for 6 months, or 4 months ago, but they only agreed to pass it for 6 months. And they gave away the store. They gave Bush more than was in the original revisions of FISA and in the Patriot Act. But they only did it for 6 months. And they were scared to death that they were going to be accused if they left for summer vacation without approving it. They were going to be called weak on the war on terror. And that's what's going to happen again. So they're going to buckle again, I guess. But basically, Dodd is taking a stand, and several other people have as well. But he said, Mr. President, I know this bill hasn't even been reported out of the Judiciary Committee yet. Again, talking about the President of the Senate. But I am here today because if I've learned anything in my 26 years in this body, particularly during the last seven, it's that if you wait until the end to voice your concerns, you will have waited too long. That's why I've written to the Majority Leader informing him that I will object to any effort to bring this legislation to the floor for consideration. I hope that Senator Leahy is able to remove this language. He's a dear friend, and I know his respect for the rule of law runs deep. But if he cannot, I am prepared to filibuster this bill. By the way, he said remove this language. I skipped over the whole section where he talks about this. But basically what he talks about is that there's language in the FISA bill to provide the telecom companies with retroactive immunity. That is, we don't know what you did to help the Bush administration eavesdrop on millions of telephone calls and internet connections and emails. We don't know exactly what you did. We're not going to worry about it. We're just going to give you immunity for it. You don't have to tell us. It's okay. That's what the Bush administration is asking for, and it's looking like Congress may buckle under, and Chris Dodd says, no, I'm not going to even let this bill come up. And I think Joe Biden came out the next day and said that he would support Chris Dodd's filibuster. I could be wrong about that. I don't know if he said he'd actually help in the filibuster, support it, or how he put it. President Bush is right about one thing. This debate is about security, but not in the way he imagines. He believes we have to give up certain rights to be safe. I believe the choice between moral authority and security is a false one. I believe it is precisely when you stand up and protect your rights that you become stronger, not weaker. The damage that was done to our country on 9/11 was stunning. It changed the world forever. But when you start diminishing our rights as a people, you compound that tragedy. You cannot protect America in the long run if you fail to protect our Constitution. It is that simple. Mr. President, history will judge this president harshly for his war of choice and for fighting it with a disregard for our most cherished principles. But history is about tomorrow. We must act today to stand up for the Constitution and the rule of law. Mr. President, this is the moment. At long last, let's rise to it. Well, I got to tell you, Chris Dodd is sounding a lot more eloquent than I'd ever heard him before. And I can't tell you how much I agree with that sentiment. We are going to look back in a few years on this era of the Bush administration and say, how did we ever get so fearful that we allowed this amateur to come into town and warp our sense of our own rights to the extent he has? Now, keep in mind that the guy behind this, in many ways, is Dick Cheney. You know, if you remember, or if you've read any of this history, you know that Dick Cheney felt wounded after Watergate, right? And let's go back over a little bit of the history of this whole thing. What has happened? And what always happens is that when there's any kind of a crisis, somebody always says, we must curtail rights, or we must bend the law to keep us safe. Think about the Cold War. We had Joe McCarthy, the demagogue, claiming that he had to unearth communists as though somehow they were going to side with the Soviet Union. And then during the Vietnam War, we had the Nixon administration. And to this day, if you tune in G. Gordon Liddy's radio show, he's a nice guy and all, and he's fun to have a glass of wine with, but he's a maniac. To this day, he argues that you have to understand the context in which Watergate took place. That is, the context in which the Republican administration burgled and played other dirty tricks against the Democratic Party headquarters. He said, you have to understand what was going on. We were at war in Vietnam. We were in a war for our lives, a war we needed to win in Southeast Asia. I guess he would still argue the domino theory is in effect, even though there's no evidence that it is a workable theory, because Southeast Asia didn't fall to communism. But he argued that between that, the race riots, but particularly the anti-war protests on campus, that the country was getting out of control. And so, you know, if the FBI was eavesdropping on Martin Luther King or on student protesters, hey, you got to understand, we had to do what we had to do, and I'd do it again. I mean, that's Liddy's perspective. Even today, he didn't actually learn anything from that whole experience. You know, most of the country realized, you know, things went too far at that point, that J. Edgar Hoover had too much power, and we'll probably never allow another FBI director to amass that kind of power. And that Nixon had too much power. And, of course, what happens is these people ultimately get hoisted by their own petards, as the expression goes. And so I suppose it's enough that Bush and Cheney will go down in history as having made colossal blunders and ultimately having harmed the country. But that doesn't help us recover the Constitution today. So it'll take us a while, but that's what checks and balances are all about, is that these things have a way of evening out over time. But I got to tell you that the level of fear that these guys have ginned up is pretty amazing. Now, the country fell for it in 2002 because we were right post September 11th. And so Bush used that as the push to go to war in Iraq, right? And we've talked about this on this show before. As you know, if you are a regular listener, you've read my blog items, my writings about the Iraq war, at andyfinn.us, that's andyfinn.us, you know that the Bush administration specifically chose to force the Congress to vote on whether or not to give Bush the power to take action in Iraq. He forced it right before the elections in early October, or maybe it was September, and before he went to the UN. And his argument was, you need to give me this power now so I can go to the UN and show, or send Colin Powell to the UN and show that the Congress is behind me. And he really squeezed him with the election time frame. And the Democrats were chicken, and they said, look, we want to talk about the economy. We want to talk about other issues. Let's get this off the front page. Let's give him the authority he wants. If we drag it out, we'll look weak on defense. We can't afford that just 1 year after September 11th. So we'll give him what he wants, and we'll move on to other issues. So they were feckless. There's no question the Democrats were feckless, complicit, however you want to do it. And Hillary today says, you know, I didn't mean to authorize him to go to war. I was giving him the power, and any president should have that power, to, as leverage, to go after Saddam Hussein and force him to comply with the sanctions. And of course it's true that Bush didn't really give sanctions a chance to work. He was antsy just less than 2 months after the inspectors were in there, even though the verdict was that Saddam was mostly boxed in and contained, and that, you know, he certainly didn't have nukes, despite the mushroom cloud analogies that Condi, Cheney, and Bush all used. But bottom line is, this was George Bush's choice. They forced that vote before the election and in the wake of September 11th. So 2002, they got what they wanted through fear. 2004, same thing. Swift voted John Kerry, and Cheney said, if you don't elect us, if you elect the Democrats, we could get hit again. That was back before their incompetence was on display in Katrina. And it really was before the chickens came home to roost in Iraq, and it became very clear to the rest of the country just how badly Bush and his team had blundered, not just going into Iraq, but in terms of trying to manage the situation in Iraq. It doesn't seem like once you go in, they could have made things much worse. Although war is always messy, they just really blunder after blunder, including up until today. There was an article in the Washington Post today explaining how the Bush administration's had a couple of years to strike some kind of a deal between the Turkish government and the Iraqi Kurds in the north to try and take care of this PKK, the Kurdish separatist movement, and nothing's been done about it. So we'll go into that another time, but basically the Bush administration is just always behind the curve on these issues. They just don't anticipate anything. Anyway, 2004, it worked. 2006, it did not work. The fear argument didn't quite work, despite the fact that in preceding these elections, they increased the threat level. They released data, selective release of classified information to essentially scare us or to convince us that, oh yeah, the threat's real. Just enough information to make the news and suggest that, oh yeah, the threat's real, but not enough information to really provide the proof or the background, just the claim. And so it didn't work in 2006. The country was sick of war, and they put the Democrats in office. Now, 2008, Bush doesn't have to run again. But a Republican has to run, and so does the Republican House and Senate. And so far, the House and Senate, most of the Republicans, have hitched their wagon to the president's policies right down the line, not just the Iraq War. And among the presidential candidates, they are fighting it out to see who can be the most hawkish. They are actually more hawkish than George W. Bush on certain issues. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I don't think the country's going to buy the Giuliani Act, which is, you know, I'm as hawkish as George W. Bush, maybe more so. I don't see it. It seems to me the country's had enough of this bellicose, I'll protect you, let me go attack somebody. We talked about Iran last week and the alarming way the Bush administration has ratcheted up the rhetoric there just a week ago. In any case, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to continue with a little bit more information about the Bush administration and quote a little bit from an article that was in the New York Times today. Paul Krugman has a commentary in which he starts by quoting FDR, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt urged America in the 1940s to, quote, to not succumb to, quote, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror. And of course, his more famous line is, the only thing we have to fear is Dick Cheney. That wasn't really his line. We think his line was, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.